Now we're going to start our series by reading the first chapter of Ecclesiastes, and it can be found on page 636 of the Bible in the pews. So Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Everything is meaningless. The words of the teacher, son of David, king of Jerusalem. Meaningless. Meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. What does anyone gain from all their labours at which they toil under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear is full of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, this is something new? It was here already, long ago. It was here before our time. There is no remembrance of people of old, and even those who are yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them. Wisdom is meaningless. The teacher was king over Israel in Jerusalem. I applied my mind to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under the heavens. What a heavy burden God has laid on the human race. I have seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind. What is crooked cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted. I said to myself, look, I have grown and increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I have experienced much of wisdom and knowledge. Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly. But I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief.
Please do take your seats. I come to this series on Ecclesiastes with a little bit of trepidation. The reason for that is I spoke with Paul Davies, and I can say this because he's not here tonight, because they're away on holiday. And I spoke to Paul Davies. He said, I've done a whole teaching series on Ecclesiastes. Would you like me to send my notes through? So I said, that would be brilliant, because anything for an easy life. And he sent it through, and the final section of his notes was entitled, Should We Preach on Ecclesiastes? And his conclusion was, by no means. So I look forward to hearing what he says when he's preaching later on in the series. If we could have the PowerPoint up, please, Bernard, that would be great. In 1849, Jean-Baptiste Alphonse Karr, as I'm sure you all know, wrote, plus ça change, plus c'est la même chose. And how true those words are, even today. Perhaps your French is better than mine, I had to look it up. The more things change, the more they stay the same. And I think that phrase captures something of our experience, but also of what the teacher writing Ecclesiastes is trying to say. And there are, I think, two seemingly contradictory things that I think probably all of us would acknowledge as true. The first of those, the pace of life is accelerating. As year follows year, it seems to go faster. Technology encroaches on more and more of our lives, so that the moment you buy whatever the latest gadget is, it's already obsolete and out-of-date technology. Last week, for example, marked the launch of the iPhone 7. I'd only had an iPhone 6 for a few months. And that's done away with the headphone jack, so if you're wanting to listen to music or watch TV or whatever without disturbing those around you, then you can no longer do that with what you had. Now, I'm sure that's more than just an attempt by Apple to make people get rid of perfectly good headphones and replace them with something else that they can only get from Apple. But technology is constantly developing and evolving. Last week, looking at Facebook, it was filled, particularly at the beginning of the week, with pictures of children stood in front of their front doors in school uniform going off to start the new year, as it was last year on about that time and the year before. It's become a tradition that parents do this. So I think it's largely so they can have a stock of photographs with which to embarrass their children when they're older. But some of the comments alongside it were, how on earth does this happen? How has it got to this point so quickly? It feels like only 5 minutes ago that they were starting their first year at their primary school, and now they're at secondary school, or now they're starting their final year at secondary school. Life gets faster and faster. Consider for a moment Emma Morano. Again, I'm not necessarily expecting anyone here. Anybody know who that is? I had to look it up. She is the only person alive on the planet today who was also alive in the 19th century. She's 116 years and 286 days old, the oldest person alive. Just imagine for a moment the changes that she has seen in her life. The changes in transport, communication, healthcare, just to name a few. And the rate of that change just gets faster and faster and easily overwhelms us. So the pace of life is accelerating. I suspect we all identify with that. And yet at the same time, just as true, nothing fundamentally changes. The life cycle continues. People are born, they grow up, they die. People continue to do incredibly good things as a reflection of the Creator in whose image we're made. And they continue to do tremendous evil within our rejection of God and His purposes. Wars and crime and suffering all continue and leave us wondering quite what the point of it all is. So life is constantly changing and constantly staying the same. What is the point? That is the question that the teacher, writing Ecclesiastes, some people think that was King Solomon, others think it was someone writing to make it look as if they were King Solomon, whichever it is, that is the question to which they address their mind. And after much consideration, he comes to the conclusion that frames this book. It comes in verse 2 of our reading today. It also comes in chapter 12 and verse 8. And that is meaningless. Meaningless. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. That word meaningless is such a key one as we go through this book. And different translations use different terms for meaningless. Some will use vanity. The King James Version, the New Revised Standard Version use vanity. Some use futility. The Hebrew word that's used is habel, from which Abel of Cain and Abel gets his name. It kind of means breath, vapor, something that's there one moment and gone the next, snatched away too quickly, leaving nothing behind. Much as Abel was killed before his time, leaving nothing behind. But as I was going through and reading around and trying to understand what it was, the term that kept coming to me that tried to capture something of this, you may know from tea time, television, it's pointless. Everything is pointless. That's what the teacher is saying. He's saying it's all pointless. pointless.
What does he mean by that? Well, he gives a lot of examples to demonstrate. The first one of those, work is pointless. Most jobs just seem to go through a never-ending cycle. I spent many of my summers when I was at school and university, and even one year when I was at Bible college, doing a summer holiday job in a factory. And the factory was somewhere where they wove fabric, which is why I've put the picture of the loom up there, making material for ties, for waistcoats, and so on. I didn't actually do any weaving because that required skill. And as a summer holiday fill-in, I didn't have any of that. But I got involved in a whole variety of aspects of the work. Perhaps got a fuller picture than some of those who only ever worked in one little bit of the company. And what they would do is they would design some ties. And then they'd take those designs out to some of the fashion houses around the world, and then orders would come in. They would buy yarn, they'd make the warps, they'd weave the fabric, they'd check it, they'd send it out, they'd get the payments. That would enable them to pay the staff, create more designs and buy more yarn, and weave more fabric and sell it and get more money in so they could go through the same cycle again and again and again. The process going on and on and on, like a roll of fabric going around the loom. Also, is that men could tie a bit of cloth around their throats. It's pointless, though it did help me raise some money. Well, my next job, I was working as a lawyer. I was prosecuting the innocent. I was defending the guilty in court. Now, what I did there might make a difference to this one or to that one, but ultimately the crime continued. Nothing changed. It all was a bit pointless. I'm particularly taking the jobs that I've done rather than necessarily anything that you've done. But I think so often we can look at our working lives and go, well, it's just this endless cycle just to get money. Just to keep life going. So let's consider then something more important than my occupational history. Let's consider life. And again, here he comes to the conclusion it's pointless. Human life continues, but as he says in verse 11, it's not even remembered. This coming Thursday, I'm going to be taking my grandmother's funeral. She was a wonderful woman. She had a clear Christian faith. And I think was probably one of the kindest people that I've ever met. And I'm going to remember her as a very significant part of my life. We would go and see her and my grandfather pretty much every weekend when we were growing up. So I will remember her. But her great-grandchildren, my cousin's two sons, they will have a slight memory of her. Because they would only be able to go and see her very occasionally. And the generations beyond that won't remember her at all. She was a loving wife, mother, grandmother. But in one sense, when you look at her life and say, well, what does it amount to? This is not going to be the thrust of what I'm going to say at the funeral. But ultimately, it amounts to nothing. It's just part of this life cycle. It's pointless. As the teacher continues, there is this sense that death is coming that renders everything else pointless. So if life is pointless, let's think bigger again. Matters of the universe. The earth's rotation, causing the sun to rise and set each day. As I was watching the opening ceremony of the Paralympics, in the commentary they mentioned that there is a custom in Rio de Janeiro of people gathering on a particular beach to watch the sunset, and as it drops below the horizon, they give it a round of applause. They didn't say within the commentary whether this was to encourage the sun to come up again the next day or just to congratulate it on a job well done that particular day. But actually, the earth does keep revolving and the sun will come up again tomorrow morning and the morning after that, and it will cross over from east to west and set. Everything just stays the same. Days, weeks, months, seasons, years. It's all just rather pointless. So then let's turn to perhaps the greatest British passion, the weather. Surely you can't say the weather's pointless, but again, the teacher here says yes. This time we're not dealing with the sun going from east to west, we have the wind going north and south, going round and round, but weather just keeps on happening. There are times it's better, there are times it's worse, but ultimately pointless. Similarly, the water cycle, something that I had to learn in geography when I was at school, where streams join with rivers, run into the lakes and seas before evaporating to fall as rain, replenishing the streams, and it just keeps going, with little purpose and seemingly nothing achieved. It's pointless. Education. Now, I speak quite tentatively here because Sheila, who's been leading our service, has spent a lifetime in education and continues as a chair of governors in a school. And so you might want to cover your ears for this bit, Sheila. But it's pointless. That's the conclusion. Because the more you know, the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know. Now, as you know, humility is one of my greatest strengths. I happen to be, and it's not something I make a big deal of, but I happen to be the world's leading authority on the history of interpretation of Hebrews chapter 4 verse 12. Because that's what I wrote my thesis on when I was at Bible college, and it's sufficiently obscure that nobody else had ever done anything on it at all. So I have become the world's leading authority on that. And looking at all the different ways in which people have interpreted the Word of God is living and active and sharper than a double-edged sword. What is the Word of God? But the more I looked at it, the more there was to look at. And ultimately, I just didn't have the time or more particularly the word count to be able to look at any more than I did. As the teacher says here, the eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. There's always more to see, to hear, to understand. Education is pointless. So rather than looking backwards, perhaps with education, what about innovation? The teacher, this time, is pointless. Now, the teacher writing here couldn't have dreamed of many of the things that we now take for granted. Cars, planes, phones, the internet. But even if he had, the answer would have still been the same. It's pointless. They may be things that make life better for a time, though often the increases in technology don't really bring satisfaction or peace. But ultimately, we're still fundamentally heading towards death. And so all of these things that might make life a little nicer for a phase are still rendered pointless, of limited value. There are even some things that cannot be fixed, cannot be solved, cannot be sorted. Twisted things that can't be straightened, lacking things that can't be counted. And yet we live with that frustration of trying to put things right when perhaps they are irretrievably broken and damaged. And we're left with this conclusion, it's just pointless. And so the conclusion that he comes to is that God has just laid a heavy burden on men. So, anyone depressed yet? As things stand so far in Ecclesiastes, depression is actually the only fitting response. Life is pointless, then you die and you're forgotten. That is the conclusion we are at the moment within Ecclesiastes. Things will change as we go through. Not within the passage we're dealing with tonight, but they will change as we go through. But actually, where that takes us is where, for so many in the world around us, that is where they're at. If we reject God, if we reject the eternal, then ultimately we are just left with this pointlessness. And so many, therefore, try and actually not just embrace it, but even celebrate it. The Humanist Manifesto that came out in the 1970s says, reason and intelligence are the very best that we have. Woohoo! And then you think, well, where has it got us? These people, reason and intelligence, they're the very best that we have, and yet actually when you look at humanity, we have not progressed in our morality in the last 3,000 years. As a whole. We're going to watch a video, and it's not a particularly theological video. It comes from Disney's The Lion King, which is not known for its theological content. It's the opening of that film, and it's a song called The Circle of Life. And so much of what we've talked about here is this cycle of life, this circle of life. You're born, you live, you die, the next generation come, the next generation come. But as we listen to the song, I think it was Elton John's song, The Circle of Life, listen very carefully to the words. They are relentlessly upbeat, and they've got a great tune. But if you listen to the words, they could almost have come directly from Ecclesiastes. It's more to see that can ever be seen, more to do than can ever be done. The circle of life from the day we arrive on the planet and step into the sun. It's all there in Ecclesiastes. And as you watch that film, which you may choose to do at some point, it follows that circle of life as Mustafa, who is the big lion that we saw in the film, the king of the beasts, he is, and apologies for any spoilers, but this film's frankly so old, if you haven't seen it by now, I'm not really going to be able to deal with that. He's the king of the beasts. He is killed. And the story then follows his son, Simba, who we saw as a little cub there, on his path to become the next king, the king of beasts, before then having his own cub to pass on. And the line continues, and the lion continues. The circle of life keeps going. So where do we go from here? Do we join our secular world and just embrace the pointless futility of continuing the species? Do we go to Dignitas in Switzerland and go, it's so awful, I just need to end it? I wouldn't encourage either of those. As we journey through Ecclesiastes, we're going to find that this teacher, after a number of false starts, does find some meaning. But he doesn't want to take us there immediately. He wants us to feel something of the despair, the meaningless, the pointlessness of life first, so that when we come and find the meaning, we'll appreciate it all the more. And at the end of the reading that Sheila read to us, we have the first of those false starts. Wisdom. Now this is, within the Bible, it's classified as a wisdom book. If the teacher was Solomon, then he was the wisest man to have lived at that time. The writer claims to have increased in wisdom more than anyone else, and yet still comes to the conclusion that wisdom is pointless. So why does he conclude that? Well, as he says, with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief. Putting another way, the more we know, the more we're frustrated by what we don't know, what we can't do. If we are truly wise, then we have to embrace truth. And if we embrace truth, then there's always going to be that tension between what is and what we long for it to be. There are things that I used to be able to cook, and never found any particular difficulty with them. I would cook it, I'd prepare it, I would serve it. It was lovely. And then I started watching some cookery TV cookery shows in which they would talk about these things and how difficult they were to cook. And since discovering that these things I'd never found difficult were difficult, I can't make them now. It's that sense of all of a sudden we find out this is futile, this is pointless, this is too hard. We kind of then hold it at arm's length. The wiser we are, the more we recognize the brokenness of the world around us, the sinfulness of humanity, the hopelessness within ourselves. Wisdom always calls on truth, and that can leave us despairing. So where we are at the moment in Ecclesiastes, and there is an argument, there is a flow that goes through, and it's not where we'll end up, but where we are at the moment, life is pointless, wisdom is pointless, but I can't quite leave us there tonight. Because ultimately, Ecclesiastes is a book with lots of joy and hope and meaning. But they're not found in the things that are, as this book so frequently calls it, things that are under the sun. Ultimately, this book is going to point us to a different source of meaning and purpose. So while wisdom is pointless, it is pointless as an end in itself. But what we'll find as we go through is that when God comes into the picture, and you might notice he's been rather absent from the rest of this sermon, but when God steps into the picture, life suddenly starts to burst with meaning and purpose and the light of eternity. We live in a lost, broken world that's so broken it can't recognize its own brokenness and so revels in and celebrates its own pointlessness in the circle of life. And we need a move of God to shake those foundations so that we can then rebuild on the revelation of God to us in Jesus Christ. And as we go through this term, we'll see something of that happen. But we've got to deal with a few more false starts first. We won't be dealing with those over the next couple of weeks. Next week, we've got Mike and Ruth's commissioning service. The week after that, Maggie Leroy is going to be leading us through an evening of kind of retreat and reflection. But from then on, we'll be following this path through Ecclesiastes to find the true meaning that ultimately can only come in God through Jesus Christ.